Hej och välkomna till avsnitt 1059 av amerikanska nyhetsanalyser med mig Ronny Berggren. En podcast som kan stödjas på swishnummer 070 30 28 95 0. Sydkorea har haft stora framgångar i kampen mot coronaviruset. Hur kommer det sig? Här pratar jag om den saken tillsammans med Laura Welsh, ursprungligen från Kanada men som är i Sydkorea där hon har flera års arbetslivserfarenhet. Varmt välkomna. Laura Welsh, welcome.
Thank you very much, Ronnie, for having me.
You know, you have been a teacher in South Korea for several years, and now you are, I assume you're visiting in South Korea at this moment, and you know, you have been there during the coronavirus outbreak. How do you experience, you know, how did South Korea experience the outbreak, to begin with that question? Because, you know, you're a neighbor to China and all of that. Can you tell me a little bit about how it started in South Korea?
Well, I've been in South Korea for 15 years now, and I'm actually living and working here. I work as a kindergarten English and math teacher, and then after school, elementary, you know, primary education. So, we got wind of the virus the third week in January when the first cases happened that were publicized in Wuhan, and then just a few days later the first cases appeared in South Korea. So it was really quickly after that, and then we just had a bit of a happiness message of thinking, oh, that it wasn't going to be too bad. And Moon Jae-in, our president, was just, you know, wanting to encourage people that that it wasn't going to be too serious. But then after a few days, oh, that's very quickly changed. So there was a secret meeting in a train station where the government officials got the private sector testing, like biological and medical device companies, together around a table, and it says, could you please come up with a test, you know, for the coronavirus, you know, as quick as you can, and so then we can test the population. So within a few days, Kojin came up with one, and then by the 12th of February, we had another one, and now we have three companies that are manufacturing them. And so then we really got on the testing, and I was a teacher, and then the education authority said that the teachers had to wear masks at school. So then we just masked up, and we taught our lessons and lived our lives, and I just had to wear a mask outside all the time and while I was in the school. The only time I didn't was when I was alone at home. So that's how it went. And then coming on the third week in February, like the first week, the first restrictions started coming out. And so then we had to organize our lives a little bit differently. And then the grandparents were not allowed to come to the graduation ceremony for my kindergarten students. And then that had to all be changed. And then the education office said that if it's not essential, that, you know, you don't hold classes. And so I just, you know, stayed home for a couple of days at the end of February. But then the education office decided to delay by 1 week the opening of school. So then we were at home. And then after that, it got delayed another 2 weeks, and to the 23rd, and then now it got delayed until the 6th of April. And so we're on restriction. We're told to stay at home as much as we can. I mean, I can still go out and do things like go to the post office, dry cleaner, get my food and everything at the organic grocers, but we aren't to be out for too long. Like, I mean, if you are seen to be at, like, they sometimes have like a the CCTV cameras are everywhere. And if they also tracking people's cards, like, you know, credit card, bank cards, spending, so that if you are out too long, then sometimes people's cards not work, like they temporarily for 24 hours deactivate your card. So you have to be careful and not be out too long, and you have to stay indoors most of the time. So I mean, there was a period of time I did not go outside for 5 days. And so I just stay in my house. I'm on my bed. I'm looking at things on computer or listening to music. So it's a bit of a holiday. But next week on Tuesday, I have to go and do the preparation, and then my private school will be back in session next Wednesday.
Yeah, but South Korea has been held up as a model how to fight the coronavirus effectively. Our Prime Minister here in Sweden, Stefan Löfven, he actually called your Prime Minister or President, he called, and, you know, talked about how to, you know, what to learn from South Korea. And a lot of, you know, international newspapers have written that South Korea has really succeeded where, you know, other countries have not, and they do not have, you know, the total lockdown like in Italy and maybe in France and so. So what is the difference between, you know, how South Korea has responded? Obviously you have some quarantines sort of, but the difference between South Korea and Europe and China and so on?
I think that one thing is that we've got a very compliant population. I think that if you give an order here in this country, people obey. Like, I see 90% of the people out on the streets with masks on, and they're very protective and they do what they're told. People don't try to defy things like what I've seen happening in Europe a lot. Like, we are very compliant because of our Confucianist, Confucianist social order and our filial piety, like, and so forth. And that we have a quarantine village. Like, I mean, if people defy the quarantine, then they have to get taken away to a quarantine village that's about 20 minutes drive from my place right here. So, and the quarantine self-isolation is very strictly enforced. That means that right now you can get an 8,000 euro fine if you break your order and 1 year in jail.
All right.
That's very, 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 very serious. And then we test like crazy. Like, we have drive-through testing, particularly of asymptomatic people, people that show no symptoms, because it's during that time that people can most spread it. And so therefore really targeting to get, you know, the most people tested. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Anybody can go and get themselves tested if they feel that they need it. And then there is a constant update of anybody in your area that has the coronavirus. They don't give names, but they give the age and where they went and all of the details and all that kind of thing, so that if you were near that, then maybe you should go and get yourself tested to see if you had exposure. So that constant updating through national alerts or alerts from City Hall is very, very helpful. And that the stores are not closed, but they have signs on them, many of them, saying if you don't wear a mask and that kind of thing, then you cannot go inside and they will not serve you and you will be thrown out. And some bus lines for the public transportation, they have a sign on the bus saying no mask, no ride. So you have to have your mask on, and some people end up wearing gloves so that they can protect themselves. And then some drivers have either taped or the hand sanitizer to a pole, and people can take the hand sanitizer and put that on their hands.
Yeah. If you would compare, you know, South Korea's actions to China's, because, you know, in China they also have this, you know, collective thinking, but they are still a lot more brutal, because people, I don't know if people obey just by, you know, hearing the orders issued by the government, or if the government really need to use force in China in another way than in South Korea.
I can see how they they needed to do that, although I do express some disagreement with how they treated some people. But there are some problems with how the Chinese went about it. They really denied a lot of what was going on, and that I personally think that the rate, the number of people that got the coronavirus and then died, is much higher than what they are reporting. But I can understand with the Wuhan, first off, like that was very scary. But I think that just the rigorous testing and the same thing that we did in South Korea would have been sufficient in China.
Yeah, but you know, do you have any thoughts about, you know, how about Europe and your own old home country, Canada? How we in the West should, you know, treat this virus? Because in the West we have a lot of, you know, integrity laws. I mean, that especially in the United States, you know, you don't want the federal government to be on your back, or the state level government or anything like that. You know, individual liberty and everything like that. And we do not have, you know, this collective thinking that you have in Asia. How should Europe, European societies, and the West, Canada and the United States, cope with this?
I've been very shocked that international flights from China were not immediately stopped, like China and Iran, because I know that in the northern part of Italy, many CEOs in the textile and the fashion industry, making bags and all that kind of thing, they sold their companies to Chinese people. And then there is a huge influx of Chinese foreign workers. Well, they needed to have, you know, been shipped home temporarily, and that you know, kind of travel needed to stop, and that they should have, again, you know, taken it, should have looked at Asia and say, oh, maybe we need to prepare, because it's just like a lack of preparedness. It's just kind of the mentality there has been like, oh, it can't get us, or it's not going to be as bad. Well, I mean, in South Korea, we only had like 9,000 cases here and only 103 deaths. That's a 1.1% mortality rate. That's even less than the seasonal flu, actually. Seasonal flu is 1.5. So we actually did such a good job that we even made it less serious than the seasonal flu. Like, it's just been incredible. Whereas it's this lack of taking things seriously. Like, sometimes I'm just shocked at people who are on their balconies and singing and on doing all that kind of stuff. Well, no wonder the virus is transmitting, because it goes through the air. Then it's like the air that the person is breathing out on the top balcony goes to the bottom, it goes to the next one underneath, and then it doubles, and then it goes into another one underneath. So a quarantine and everything means you don't go outside on your balcony all together and start singing and all that kind of thing. They need to stay indoors a lot more. And that kind of thing has really shocked me. Do people not understand what, you know, staying indoors means? And I know that people want to encourage each other, but please find another way, yeah, you know, to do that. And I'm just seeing that the lack of preparedness. Like, I mean, I was reading something about, I mean, just before I came on, I was just shocked at this news story out of Spain, where the 11% of the cases of coronavirus are in healthcare professionals, because they were just not given the proper gear to prevent themselves from becoming infected. Like, what is going on with the lack of supplies like masks, the hazmat suits, gloves, you know, protective gear for the eyes and all that kind of thing? It really surprises me that there has not been the responsibility of the European governments to kind of, you know, stockpile enough supplies so that their healthcare workers and the population are not put at risk. And yeah, it's because of that in hospital transmission that the cases have gone so high and the death rate has been so astronomical.
Yeah, you know, the United States shut its border towards China in, I think it was in late January. Did that have any effect? Because Europe did not do that. But do you think that helped the United States? Because, you know, there is still, you know, the outbreak is growing in the United States, even though they closed the border to China 2 months ago.
Yes, I think that that really slowed it down considerably. Like that, in for a country its size, they've only had maybe about, you know, 300 or 400 deaths, and that's incredibly low for 330 million people. That's 2/3 of the population of the European Union. So that, I mean, in comparison to Europe, the U.S. has done remarkably well, but it was because of the CDC wanting to have a monopoly on the testing instead of, you know, we engage the private sector. All of our testing is done by private companies. This is called the miracle of capitalism here. And that was how we were able to have this competition and that got the testing supplies out, in that the CDC and the FDA wanted to have a monopoly on everything, and that's what really messed the US up, instead of having the testing supplies and the laboratories and everything done privately in every single state. It was just like this bureaucratic, you know, fight, you know, to monopolize, instead of actually thinking about what we can do to help save the population, kind of deal.
Yeah. What would you say about, you know, Canada's response to this? Because, you know, Justin Trudeau, your prime minister, his wife has the coronavirus, and she seems to be very sick.
Yes, I would say that Canada's been abysmal. They still have unscreened flights from China as of right now, and flights, you know, from Iran and Italy. So, I mean, none of, and no screening, nothing. It's just been really pathetic, you know, to be perfectly honest.
Was there, a political reason for that? Because, you know, we had in Italy, they had this campaign, Hug a Chinese Day. We had this, you know, it was a China finance campaign. And there was a Chinese man in the city of Florence, I think. And he had a sign that said, I am not the virus. And then you should hug him. It was like inviting the coronavirus to Italy. But, you know, a lot of people in Europe and in the left in the United States have been thinking in the same direction, that it is racism to stop close the border to China. Do they have some similar thinking in Canada?
Yeah, I would have to agree that there is some similar thinking going on there. I agree totally.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, okay. Thanks a lot, Laura, for the conversation. And it was really interesting to get a perspective from South Korea. So thank you.
You're very welcome, and you have a very nice day.
Det var avsnitt 1059 av amerikanska nyhetsanalyser, en konservativ podcast som finns för att ge det djupa perspektiv som svensk media sällan ger. Stöd gärna på swishnummer 070 30 28 95 0 eller genom att via hemsidan stödja på PayPal, Patreon eller bankkonto. Det var allt för idag. Tack för att ni har lyssnat.